Live Creative Now, episode 51.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Live Creative Now, and I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive, and it's how you change the world. So I have to tell you that I just finished recording this entire episode, episode 51, only to realize that it wasn't recording. So this is take two. This is the reality of what happens behind the scenes for podcasters once sometimes. Ay, ay, ay. Anyway, last week in the last episode, episode 50, I shared the first part of a two-part series all about what gets in the way of clearing out clutter. This is such a big issue when it comes to living a full-color creative life, because when we are weighed down by our clutter, it's just so hard to bring in the things, the kind of life that we want. So a couple times a year, I run this spring cleaning party on steroids, the Great Clutter Bust. And if you want a little taste for free, join me on Thursday or next Monday, because I'm having a live, totally free mini Clutter Bust webinar where I'm going to share some things, some little tips, and then we're going to actually do some real decluttering live on the call together. So you can find a link to that in the show notes at livecreativenow.com/051 for episode 51. So last week, in part one of this two-part series, I shared four excuses that get in the way of releasing clutter. Because, as I said, there are deep-rooted emotions tied to our stuff. And unless and until we deal with the emotions, there's no way that we can get rid of the stuff. So last week I shared four reasons why we hold on to clutter, and this week I'm going to share four more reasons that we hold on to clutter. So reason number five, I spent a lot of money on it. Ay, ay, ay. So last week I mentioned in part one how hard it was for me to let go of the sample ketubah prints that I had printed and had beautifully wrapped in display packaging to exhibit at my booth at wedding fairs. And the main reason that letting these go was so hard was because doing so meant really burning a bridge. It meant cutting all ties to that particular career direction. And that's what I talked about in last week's episode. It was also a recognition of a failure that I wasn't able to 10x my business by doing wedding fairs, which of course is what I was hoping. So having those prints around all that time, you know, just continuing to hang around was just a reminder that I had failed, right? But even after I knew that I never wanted to do another wedding fair as long as I live, and I don't, it still felt really hard to me to let go. Why? Well, because partly because I had spent a lot of money on those things. Now, eventually, the prospect of all the freed up space that I would have, and of course, the prospect of not being reminded on a daily basis of that I had failed to turn wedding fairs into the magic bullet that would 10x my business, eventually all of that overcame my resistance to letting go. But I will not lie to you, it was hard. Now, with that as background, imagine how much harder it is to even consider letting go of the hundreds of ketubah lithographs stacked in boxes under my bed. Okay, now I'm going to have to give you a little background here, so bear with me. Most of my ketubah designs, and I still have the ketubah business, you can see it at ketubahworks.com or just go to the show notes, livecreativenow.com/051, and you'll find links in the show notes to my ketubah business website. Most of the ketubah designs that I have, all of them except for two, are digital. They're giclée prints, which is basically a fancy name for a very high quality inkjet print. And they're all printed to order one at a time. So there's no storage issues. The storage is all on a hard disk. But two of my early designs, actually my second and third prints that I ever made, I had printed the old-fashioned way using offset lithography. And what that means is the entire edition had to be printed at once. So I had, I'd have to do some quick math, which I'm not, I'm not good at doing quickly on the fly, but something like 3,000 prints or something. And so, and I have a lot of them left. I've sold a lot of them, but I also have a lot of them left. And that many prints, when you're talking, you know, 2,000 prints or however many it is, 19 inches by 25 inches approximately, they take up a lot of space. Now, each of those two different lithograph designs have multiple versions because I created a variety of pre-printed texts so that couples could pick the text that works for their needs. And all the texts have blank spaces that were intended to be filled in by hand with the couple's names and their wedding date and the wedding location. And for several years, that was a very big part of my job as a ketubah artist. I would fill in the prints with special calligraphy pens to match the pre-printed text, which I had originally calligraphed with the same special calligraphy pens, and then printed up with the border design to make the print. So hopefully that makes sense. This is all background. I stopped doing the fill-ins back in 2005 when I had fonts digitized from my calligraphy. So I worked with a type designer to create some fonts from my lettering, from my hand lettering. And can I hear a hallelujah for that? It meant I never had to fill in those prints ever again. And I could finally reclaim my drafting table for playing, making art for me instead of just for filling in ketubah prints. Anyway, almost nobody fills in prints by hand anymore because the digital revolution has taken over the ketubah business, just like everything else. So most ketubah artists sell prints and they use type. They don't even do most new ketubah artists don't even do calligraphy. So what that means is I've got tons of essentially units of stock that don't sell very much because nobody fills them in, so nobody wants to buy them. Very few people want to buy them. Now, I do have one design that's always been a really good seller. It's called Arts and Crafts Roses, and I have a link in the show notes if you want to take a look at it. But I was smart enough to have a version of that design printed way back in 2002 without any text. So it's just the border. And a bunch of those live at my printer's warehouse. So when somebody orders that ketubah, I just create a file of the text out of my calligraphy fonts, and my printer prints that text onto the blank ketubah and ships it to the customer. But the rest of them, I have all these different versions of each ketubah design with different texts, and they're just sitting there taking up space. They fill up the entire space underneath my queen size bed. And in fact, it's a special bed frame that I searched on Google until I found a bed frame that I liked that could have more space between the floor and the bottom, you know, underneath the box spring. So it's like 2 feet filled with these boxes of ketubah prints. I would love to clear out that space and be able to vacuum underneath my bed and not have it collect dust, you know? But these are assets, right? I still have my ketubah business. And how could I possibly dump assets that could bring in revenue, right? Crazy. But are they really assets? That is the question. Now, I have sold a lot of these prints since I created them back in 2002. I have sold many, many tens of thousands of dollars worth over the years, in fact, but I don't sell very many of them anymore. And honestly, I'm not interested in investing more of my time and energy into trying to sell them because my passions lie elsewhere. My passions lie in building up my business as a speaker and creativity instigator and spreading my message, changing the conversation around creative expression and play. So these quote-unquote assets are, in fact, just very expensive doorstops, essentially. And it finally occurred to me, not that long ago, I don't know, some months back, it finally occurred to me to look at how much am I actually earning from selling these particular prints that have the text that have to be filled in by hand? How much am I actually earning each year from selling them? And the truth is, at the rate that they're currently selling, it could take me several lifetimes to sell out the editions. So then I asked myself, okay, wait a second. These are taking up all this space in my townhouse underneath my bed. What if I were to rent a storage locker, get them out from under my bed? What if I, you know, stored them elsewhere? Would that make financial sense? And the reality was, no. I am not selling enough of these to make it cost effective for me to rent a storage locker to store them. And suddenly that put things into perspective. All of a sudden, instead of seeing the prints as assets, I saw them as liabilities that I am essentially paying to store. I'm paying in space and I'm paying in irritation to store. And I live in Silicon Valley. Space costs a lot in Silicon Valley. And suddenly my willingness to let go rose dramatically. So I offer this to you as a very dramatic example of, I paid a lot for this. Think about the things that you are looking at in your closet, in your house, whatever, that are hard for you to let go because you paid a lot for them. The reality is, that's a sunk cost. In other words, you're not going to recoup that cost. Yes, you paid a lot for it, but holding on to it is not going to recoup that cost. It's not going to give you the money back, and it's not going to give you the value back, especially if it's something that you are not using and is maybe making you feel guilty or bad about yourself because, you know, clothes that don't fit you anymore or whatever, something that you bought with a good intention that you wanted to use and you're not using it. And now it's glaring at you, making you feel badly that you're not using it. It's not serving you to keep it. So that is reason number five, why we hold on to clutter. I spent so much money on it. Once you let go, once you get to the place where you're willing to let go, there's still another hurdle to leap over. And that is number six. If I can't do it right, I won't do it at all. In other words, perfectionism. Once you have earmarked stuff for releasing, the next question is, what the heck do I do with it? And this is where perfectionist gremlins love to creep in. To continue with that example of my ketubah prints, for a few years, it felt like the only way I could possibly let them go, because I was still seeing them as assets rather than liabilities, the only way I could possibly let them go would be if I could sell them, like sell the whole lot to another, you know, another ketubah seller. And I did actually send out some email inquiries to see if any other company was interested in buying them. I didn't really push it that hard, but I made a little bit of an effort. And guess what? Nobody else wanted to take on this particular storage problem either, because the reality is not many people want to buy ketubah prints with blank spaces that have to be filled in by hand. So there they sat, gathering dust, and when I finally dealt with, oh, I spent so much money on these, I can't possibly let them go. When I finally felt ready, okay, I can let them go. I don't have to try to recoup more revenue than I've already made out of these print runs. I found myself really stuck with what to do next. Because these are pounds and pounds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sheets of really good quality paper. And I'm an artist and I love paper. And that paper could be used. And the prospect of, you know, shredding them or hiring a hauling company to cart them to landfill, oh my God, that just made me cringe. That felt like such a horrible, wasteful thing to do. So, you know, I thought, well, I could donate them to a local school to use in their art department or to the local resource area for teachers, or RAFT for short, which is basically, it's a charity. It's a warehouse that accepts material donations and then sells them for pennies to teachers to use in their classrooms. And I loved the idea of donating so that students would get to use this really good paper, but I didn't feel really comfortable doing that without somehow rendering them unusable as ketubot, because I just didn't like the idea of my art being resold or used without my permission or knowledge. Now, it'd be easy enough to render them unusable. Just, you know, take a marker and make a big X across the front. Nobody would use it. But geez, I didn't want to have to spend hours doing that to hundreds and hundreds of prints one at a time. That just made me gag thinking about it. So, by the way, my husband had the brilliant idea, which is what I'm planning to do during the upcoming Great Clutter Bust, is to take our drill and drill holes through a stack at a time. So I finally have a way to deal with these particular prints. But it took so much time and energy to figure out how the heck to get rid of them. And, you know, this is a pretty particularly dramatic example, but I could give you dozens more, because I don't want to just dump my clutter. I want to dispose of it in the most earth-friendly way that I can, in the most useful way that I can. I want to get it in the hands of people who are going to love it and use it and get value out of it. But there's not always an easy way to do that. So the stuff just stays. So what is the solution when that's the thing that's keeping you holding on to your clutter? Well, just like my husband had the great, brilliant idea to use our drill to drill holes in the ketubot prints so they couldn't be used, other people often have really great ideas. And in last year's Great Clutter Bust, members were sharing all kinds of resources and suggestions for how to get rid of clutter and where to take it. And I found out about all kinds of resources, like the hauling company that I hired to come and get the rest of the stuff that didn't sell when I had a yard sale to get rid of a bunch of stuff. I found out about them from the other members. It was great. And I also submit that a healthy dose of imperfectionism is super helpful, because, you know, if your goal is to be surrounded by beauty and order and calm and serenity, at a certain point, you just have to accept that done is better than perfect. So that's reason number 6. I don't know what to do with it. Ah. Reason number 7, why we hold on to clutter. I'm not going to have an excuse anymore to keep my space off limits to guests if I clear up my clutter. Now, this is not really an issue for me personally. And in fact, I found it through a Google search. I was looking up what other people have said about why people hold on to clutter. And this hasn't been my issue. And in fact, I often will turn this one on its head in order to get me to clear my space, because nothing gets me clearing stuff out, nothing gets me cleaning, dusting, vacuuming, whatever, like knowing I have guests coming over on a certain date. Hoo boy, it is a built-in deadline and it gets me to do the work. I love it and I hate it at the same time. However, if you find yourself resistant to clearing your clutter because you don't want people in your space, this is a wonderful opportunity to use my golden formula, which is, if you've listened for any time at all, you've probably heard me say it many times, self-awareness plus self-compassion equals the key to everything good. So ask yourself, is it hard for you to set limits on your space without the excuse of your clutter? That's the self-awareness piece. If that's the case, first acknowledge that you're human. You're not the only person on the planet with this issue. You are certainly not the only person on the planet who has struggled with setting limits. I have written about that in the past. It's a huge thing for me. I'm still learning how to set limits in my life. So if this is true for you, acknowledge that you're human. That's okay. And take a look at, you know, maybe perhaps it's time to practice setting limits as a form of loving self-care. That's the self-compassion piece, to respond acknowledging that you're human and treating yourself with kindness. What can you do? What's the most loving thing that you can do? And if you are cluttering up your space in order to avoid setting limits, the most loving thing that you could do would be to practice that hard thing of setting limits and learning how to do it so that you can clear out your space and not have to be surrounded by clutter. And perhaps it's time to build up your sense of self-worth so that you feel you are entitled to set limits, because that is the truth. You are entitled to set limits. So if you're keeping your environment cluttered as a way to avoid setting boundaries, that is not treating yourself with love and kindness. Now, this is not an excuse to beat yourself up. It's another wonderful opportunity to love yourself up and to figure out how to love yourself better. Imagine how wonderful it will feel to be surrounded by beauty and order, calm and serenity instead of clutter. You deserve that. You deserve that wonderful feeling, whether or not you want to keep your space for yourself. So that is reason number 7 why we hold on to clutter. I'll have no more excuse to keep my space off limits to guests. Wonderful opportunity to learn to set limits. And we come to the final reason of this series, reason number 8 for why we hold on to clutter. I don't know where to start. Oh my God, this is exactly how I felt for years. Whenever I walked into my studio of doom, the studio of doom that, by the way, followed me to 3 different homes. And it was still doomy every time I moved, even though I moved into a bigger space. It was still the studio of doom. Now, this overwhelm of, I don't know where to start. It's so overwhelming. What happens is this becomes an excuse, like it became for me, which meant that I never started at all, right? So for me, what worked best to get past this hump was a few different things. The first was I made the decision and I made the commitment to dedicate a month of time to really make the time to declutter with the Great Clutter Bust. Just a month. It had an end cap to it. It wasn't like the rest of my life. I was going to tackle as much as I could in a month. And I still had work to do. I still had a normal life. But I was prioritizing decluttering during that month. So that's the first thing that really, really helped, really making that commitment. The second thing is that I surrounded myself with a really supportive community. Other people struggling with the same clutter issues, dealing with the same clutter shame that I was dealing with, all of us with a deep desire to change. And so we could inspire each other with before and after pictures in the Facebook group and cheer each other on and, you know, prop each other up when we're feeling down and frustrated, right? Huge difference. And then a third thing that helped was to create external accountability and deadlines. We love them and we hate them, right? And again, that was via the Great Clutter Bust Community Facebook group, where I had 24/7 accountability that I could plug into, and our regular live calls. And that group, and especially the regular calls, made all the difference. Throughout the month of the Great Clutter Bust, members have literally dozens of opportunities to dial in or log in to a video conference platform. And we all, one at a time, we share what we're going to work on for the next chunk of time. Usually it's 2 to 3 hours. And then we get to work. And there's something really cool about knowing that other people are working right alongside you, even though they're maybe thousands of miles away. It makes it really fun. Like, that was something that really kind of astonished me, was that clutter busting actually became fun, not just this thing that I dreaded. That was really a gift. So once you've made the commitment and you've set up the right structures to help keep you on track, I always find it motivating to start with the low-hanging fruit. In other words, to clear the clutter that is the biggest eyesore. The stuff that, if you could just get rid of that, it's going to change the way your space looks and feels right off the bat, and it's going to give you a big hit of motivation. I'm really big on starting with low-hanging fruit. And just as it says in my Creative Sandbox Manifesto, this is guidepost number 5, if you are stuck, just start. Anywhere. If you can start, and if you can get the support that you need to keep going, it is amazing the space and energy that you can liberate and the magic that you can create. What is always so cool to me, it shouldn't surprise me anymore because I know it. I know that it happens, but it's always so miraculous that when you clear things out of your space that are not serving you, that are just energy drains, new stuff comes in. Like, really new good stuff comes in. It really is life-changing. And this was the experience of so many of the Great Clutter Bust members from last year as well. Lucy, one of last year's members, said, I love this, I can move in our garage, because their garage had been so packed with stuff that she literally could not move in it. And the Great Clutter Bust got it so she could actually move in her garage. I love that so much. And she went on to write, things are in order. Paper piles are diminishing. We have a new look and feel in our living room. It's dramatically changed the feng shui. Now I truly enjoy the new experience of being in this room. That was my experience as well, from my studio of doom, which made me cringe every time I walked into it. And I felt so ashamed and so awful. And to be able to walk in and enjoy being in this space is such a gift. Another one of the members, Denise, I love this, early on in the Great Clutter Bust, she wrote, is it possible to overrate calm and serenity? I'm beginning to think not. And that was echoed over and over again. Denise continued, being in this group has been an incredible motivator for me. It's the only reason so much has been done these past weeks. That, by the way, is the accountability piece, the external accountability and the deadlines. It's the only reason so much has been done these past weeks. It's not like I didn't know what I needed to do. I just couldn't or wouldn't get started. Or I would get started and I couldn't or wouldn't sustain the effort for as long as it would take to finish. And that is what the group helps everyone do. And another member, Stephanie, wrote, every time I throw something out, I feel like a pound of weight has been lifted off my shoulders. I feel connected and supported as I declutter, which has turned out to be much harder and more emotional than I realized. As a little interjection here, as I mentioned, there are a lot of emotions tied to our clutter. So that's one of the reasons it's so helpful to have a group to work through it with. So Stephanie continues, knowing I'm not alone in this has been gold. The activity in the group is also a gentle reminder to keep decluttering a priority so I don't give it up or put it off yet again. I'm getting clarity on how I want to transform my space to better support me, both in how I want to live and what I want to accomplish. I am literally clearing out the space to live my dreams. I love that. That is the magic of clutter busting. That is why this is so relevant to the topic of living a full-color creative life. When you clear out your space, when you transform your space to better support you, you are literally clearing out the space to live your dreams. So I hope you'll join me for one of my upcoming live mini clutter bust webinars, which you can find links to in the show notes, livecreativenow.com/051. And I hope you'll jump on in the Great Clutter Bust, which starts on Tuesday, April 12th. You can read more and sign up at greatclutterbust.com. That's greatclutterbust.com. So that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you will join me at one of my free webinars and hopefully in the Great Clutter Bust as well. You can find all the links you need in the show notes, livecreativenow.com/051. And until next time, thanks again and go get creating. Mwah! Live creative now. Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.